Good afternoon. Good afternoon, dear listeners. And welcome to the special program of election analysis in Namibia, particularly when we are looking at the aspect of regional and local authority elections, which is ongoing in Namibia. And the program is hosted by me, David Shombe, my colleague Francine Ngera. And in the studio, in a very short time, we'll be joined by Dominga Ndala, who is a youth leader from LPM. And we are also going to be in communication with Prof. Johan Kutsie, just to speak about the current happening, particularly regarding the ongoing elections, especially regional and local authority, the necessity of it. But before we go to that conversation, we're also going to look at a very short background to say what have been happening in Namibia regional and local authority elections, especially from 1990 until where we are. What are some of the things which were pertinent, particularly in those elections? What are some of the things which, motivated people to vote? What were center of debates? What were center of campaigns? And, apart from that, we'll also be in communication with, my colleagues from Ondangwa and Rundu there to give us updates to see, what is really happening. What is happening on the other side of Rundu, and also what are some of the development out there and some of the changes.
Lipura nengeno wapubwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe udite opoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuan onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ineko mberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu hatatu o mafilane Eagle FM bi-ai.
We are moving forward with a special election analysis program, especially looking at regional and local authority elections, particularly what is happening in Namibia. And as I indicated, we'll be joined by my colleague, Francine Ngera, Professor Johan Kutsie, and also in the studio we are with Dominga Ndala, the youth leader, and is also, an analyst, and also to give us perspective, particularly what's happening in the Namibian current politics. So before we go to... before we go to the main conversation and so look at our participants and our guest, Dominga Ndala, good afternoon and how are you doing?
Good afternoon, David. It's always a pleasure being here, and good afternoon to your listeners.
Yes, maybe just before we go to the conversation, because, before you introduce anybody, I have to go to your background. Last time I checked, we were at university, but you took a different, very beautiful path. That, but maybe just a short background. Who is Dominga Ndala, and also a short briefing on what we expect from this show.
Dominga Ndala is a youth leader that is passionate about social and youth empowerment.
Yeah.
Of course, after university, like you alluded, that we took a different path. I decided to go into active politics because the time and space allowed us to do that.
Yeah.
Of course, we have grown into the ranks and files of various political parties.
Yeah.
But of course, professionally, I'm a parliamentary researcher for the Landless People's Movement Landless People's Movement Chief Whip's Office at the National Assembly.
Yeah.
And of course, through that exposure, we begin to occupy spaces in other positions in other spaces. Currently, I'm the executive member of the Pan African Renaissance, African Network program, and I also lead the Young Women of Africa Namibian chapter.
Yeah.
So I think we have done quite well on the political side.
Yeah.
And of course, this is why we are here, and we are able to really dissect the political landscape of Namibia, because As you know, we are trained political science students.
Yeah, indeed,
that
indeed.
is our profession, and we have been trained by the University of Namibia. Yes.
Yeah. That is that is our guest, Dominga Ndala. And we are also going to give you an opportunity to engage us in the studio, particularly when we give a platform. For now, we are going to communicate with Francine Ngera just to give us a short background. Then I'll come with democracy and young people. And Dominga will touch more on youth and participation in local and regional authority elections, either in terms of active politics or in terms of them turning out. So we're going to have a very short commercial break. Then we can engage Francine Ngera.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So, not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take out my cattle. Menace,
right,
because I grew up in Katatura, and I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Lipurane ngelo wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete okoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwala konongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka okone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamoili nawa ninge kwata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kongerewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM di ae.
Yeah, we are continuing with election analysis. Analysis is a special program, and I'm in communication with Franz Sinengera. He's a global politics enthusiast and also follow Namibian politics. And just to unpack or assist us in giving a background, especially on regional and local authority elections, what have been some of the pertinent issues, particularly in the first elections of regional and local authority? What are some of the challenges? What is the difference between the previous and also the current elections? What motivates the voters and all those things? Mr. Francine Ngera, good afternoon and welcome to the special program of election analysis. How are you doing?
Yes, good afternoon.
Yes, Samuel. Yes, maybe just to brief us, particularly in the background of regional and local authority election, what have been happening and what are some of the key issues, particularly from the beginning post, colonial Namibia?
Yeah, there are two major differences between now and then.
Yeah.
1992, the first elections were prompted by empowered by the creation of two electoral acts.
Okay, okay.
That is, the main one was more of the Electoral Act 24 of 1992, when it was adopted in Parliament on the 31st of August, 1992, now culminating into the elections that took place on November 30th to, I think, December 1st.
Yeah.
That is 1992. It was quite an interesting, process of election, because they were using more of manual, voter scan that was made manual. Until 2002. So in 2003, that's when they a little bit improved, when they did a laminated voter scan. I think none of you have seen that, have had that. I can hear the Mingandala there.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Dominga, but you don't know what I'm talking about.
No, definitely.
Yeah, so, but it was a laminated water skirt. I had one. I used it that was an improved one by then. I think in August 2003.
Yeah.
We got to apply, and I mean, get those, those water skirts that we used them in 2004.
Yeah.
Election. Yeah. So, but one of the key difference between the 1992 elections,
if you
look at now the, local authority elections in the 2020 and then of course 2025 respectively. Don't also forget that in 1998 there were local authority elections, and I think it was one of them was in 2011 or 2010 around there. Things became chaotic around 2010, 2011. Things became a little bit chaotic. But in 1992, it was mostly about political parties.
Yeah.
Young people, they were kind of radicalized.
Yeah.
To not really to focus on nation development and national building. They were mostly focusing on, political parties. And you see, it was still fragile, republic, not that much matured, because it was just 2 years before, 2 years after independence. So anything could, anything could happen at that time. So it was a very fragile, very immature republic and democracy by that time.
So you are saying the politics of 1992 was based on, political parties, to say you look at political parties, not on policy, not on developmental issues.
No, I don't. People were not really much aware of policies.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there were no policies as much because some of the policies were still in process. The National Assembly was just, I think on the 7th of January 1990, and I think by the 7th of February 1990, that's when it was declared to be the National Assembly of the first one. So, and there were no much policies made by that time. And it was also very costly to, make awareness on national policies because the country was very vast and unreached in terms of road network that were not, in order.
Okay.
It was very difficult.
Now,
if you compare 1992 with now, a lot have changed. Yeah, so that's why it was more of a political party. You are more, sensitized. It was more about the political party. So it was easier for party like SWAPO and DTA that existed by that time to really make it in most constituencies as compared to now.
Now, let us look at key motivating things, or what are the key issues that, what is the difference in terms of key issues that, were at the center of elections. Let's look at early 2000, then we can come maybe in 2020, then we also look at where we are now, to say what have changed, and also what have changed in terms of the behaviors of voters, particularly looking at the difference that we have in the period of time electing councillors either at the local authority and also at the regional authority level.
I think the issue was population also, because population, small population played like a blessing and a curse at the same time, as far as political formations were concerned.
Yeah.
Because by that time people were very few, it was very easy for an idea to penetrate through. and make an impact before elections as compared to now, when we have a vast, at least we have a majority, we have quite a number of people in Namibia now. One really has to work hard now to convince a young person, because a lot of policies are now on and people are reading and are questioning. So there's a lot of discussion on policies and development going on social media compared to the early 2000s, where social media did not even exist.
Mm-hmm.
So some of us were young people at that time. We were very backward. I mean, we were young people, but we were living in the 1920s. There was no access to anything except the radio. Now, radio was good, but dangerous at the same time, because we only had one voice then. There were no independent, radio, organizations where you can hear different voice from the the monotonous voice that was there. So it was a very interesting and a dangerous time to live in at the same time.
Yeah. Before I come to Dominga, and also because we are also going to be in communication with Professor Johan Kutsie, I want you to give your view, especially when you look at the Local Authority Act of 1992. Did the act achieve what it wanted, or did the regional councillors and also local authority councillors achieve what they wanted from 1992, if we have to put it that way, to where we are now? What were some of the changes that were brought by these people that are called, the grassroots leaders, the one who can connect people with the national leaders? What did they achieve? What was supposed to be achieved in all those years? And what were some of the challenges there?
You see, I think we have achieved what we have achieved now because those people laid the foundation of what exists today. Because they were the first councillors, they were the first municipal, officials.
Yeah.
They laid the foundations. In fact, some towns were developing faster in those days as compared to now, when they are shrinking and dying because of, some corrupt and very stubborn officials that have been, have infiltrated the town council by the help of their own voters, of course. So, and I have to be aggressive on that point.
But
the beginning people have laid a foundation.
Yeah.
But there were also rumors, because of rumors of deliberate sabotage by SWAPO, because of, the fact that, some towns were taken up by the opposition. The major opposition were two in 1992 that were really prominent, like the UDF. And the DTA that, of course, managed to scoop some of the town under their towns under their control. That led to accusation on the SWAPO side of deliberately sabotaging and kind of like
sabotaging development in terms of
in those towns. So, but if you look at what happened, like for example, in those days, like young people were not really much informed as compared to the young people of the 2020, for example, that led the election that took place in 2020, of local election that saw, the coastal areas in the hands of the IPC and also the breaking of SWAPO majority in the city of Windhoek. Of course, bringing chaotic leadership in Windhoek because of the oppositions that could not work together. Because each of them had their own ideologies and egocentric mentality that led to, a kind of like a squabble for years in city of Windhoek. But that's politics. That's how it is. But then you appreciate the fact that young people were able to understand better as compared to the young people of 1998 and the young people of 1992. They were able to have the understanding, and that's what led to what you're seeing, where, you know, SWAPO's majority has to be broken.
Mm.
And of course, some towns being taken by the opposition, which was very odd, you know, under normal circumstances.
Yes.
But when you look at the now elections, it's still early to really talk about them, because it's a pot that is still cooking.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should eat it first and see whether the taste is still the same,
yeah,
or there's a new spice that is added on.
Okay, just stay online, and I want you to come in,
mm-hmm,
especially when we speak about young people and their participation in elections. I want you to touch on for example, for the past 5 years, where we have seen different young people entering into politics, and also you see changes in terms of coalitions. It never happened in the city of Windhoek, for example. But I want you to look at the role of young people in Namibian politics, particularly in regional and local authority elections. What are some of the key issues which force them to elect? And maybe not to bombard you with questions.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen you have traveled around the continent, maybe
mm-hmm
outside too,
mm-hmm,
and you have observed elections. But I also want you to compare the understanding of Namibian youth, the
mm-hmm
activeness, with other African countries. If we have to start from there, then we can look at those issues.
Mm.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for the questions.
Yeah.
I think for the past 5 years,
yeah,
we have seen an influx of young people,
yeah,
really flooding the political space.
Yeah.
And it starts right from 2019, where political parties decided to field young people on their parliamentary list.
Yeah.
And of course, we have seen the LPM filling young people on their list. We have seen the PDM.
Mm.
And we have seen all other parties. And not only that,
mm,
2019, of course, when the SWAPO party won at
yeah
national level,
yeah,
you have seen that the late President Gingob also appointed a few young people, the
yeah
likes of Patience and as
yeah
well as MI Theophilus.
Yeah.
Of course, that kind of sparked
yeah
the interest of young people to really participate in politics at the very high level.
Mm-hmm.
Because then that means that young people are able to occupy strategic positions.
Mm-hmm.
They are able to influence policies at mm-hmm a very young age,
yeah,
at the very high level, sorry. And in 2020,
yeah,
you have seen that is one of the year where we have seen an influx
yeah
of young people really participating in regional and local authorities.
Yeah.
And part of that was the sensitization from political parties.
Mm-hmm.
Two, of course, political parties wanted to appeal to the youth constituency.
Mm.
And they also, of course, wanted to capture a new breed of voters.
Yeah.
And that can only be done by what? By really representing or placing young people in such strategic positions.
Yeah.
And of course, a lot of young people had entered that space. Some
yeah
knew what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Some were, of course, clueless.
Some learned.
Yeah, some learned throughout,
yeah,
throughout the way. And I think the other important part in that occurred during that time was the influx of independent candidate.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have seen that each and a majority of our constituency,
mm,
we had a lot of independent candidates contesting,
mm,
because their thinking was the traditional political parties do not really represent
mm
the interest of the masses.
Mm.
But them as an independent candidates or them as activists, they are able to push
mm
the agenda of their communities at the very in very strategic space. And with the young people entering those councils,
yeah,
I guess there was no really much orientation
mm
from their political parties. You have seen that we experience a lot of tussles,
yeah,
particularly with the city of Windhoek Council.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even for them to elect their mayor,
yeah,
you have seen that they had to postpone three or four times.
Yeah.
And that comes yeah from
yeah
the fact that when political parties enter into coalition,
yeah,
they should just not do that for political survival,
mm,
but they should ensure that they do it for the masses of their people. We need to have a clear memorandum of understanding,
yeah,
on land audit,
yeah,
on job audit.
Yeah.
How are we going to implement the promises,
yeah,
that we have been telling our constituents during the campaign trail?
Mm.
Of course, that has been one of the disappointing factors,
yeah,
when it came to when political when it came to really political parties forming coalition. But of course, I think it has been one of the first in a very few years that political parties were actually supposed to compromise and to give consensus where they can. But I think if we need to brought up the discussion and really compare the activeness of young people in Namibia vis-a-vis from other countries, I think Namibian youth are still lagging.
Oh.
Within other African countries, you would see that they don't necessarily use political parties as a vehicle to protest or to demand change, but they use other means such as movements or they assemble themselves as community members. So they are more of active citizens and they don't necessarily need a political vehicle to sort of to bring about that change or perhaps to demand the services.
Mm-hmm.
Case in example, we can look at the FISMAS fall in South Africa.
Yeah,
that was
a
very broad-based student movement that did not need any political party to drive that agenda.
Mm-hmm.
But this was students that were concerned about the high tuition fees at the respective universities. And they really came together and they achieved their goal.
Yeah.
The recent GBV national shutdown in South Africa also showed that you do not need a political vehicle to demand what is right, but you just need like-minded young people to come together.
Mm-hmm.
The young people in Kenya, I think, the young people in Kenya, they remain an inspiration, the Gen Zs. They remain as an inspiration to all African countries. They came together and they protested against, the finance bill. So that was, there was no political vehicle that was used, but it was basically just like-minded young people that came together with a common goal to achieve whatever they wanted to achieve.
Indeed. Now I want, was the voice of young leaders within regional and local authority, leadership head, did that voice come out, not only in the city of Windhoek, in any part of Namibia? We have seen a lot of councillors with 20 years, 23 years, but did they push the agenda of young people within those councils, or was just a process of learning? And what do you think need to be changed, particularly with youth leaders, moving forward to fight for that interest?
Mm.
Then we can come to the aspect of voter empathy and all those things. Yeah.
Of course, I always say having young people in strategic position is one.
Yeah.
And really having young people that understand their role is another issue. Yes.
Yeah.
So it's not always about a descriptive representative. And this is what we did.
Mm-hmm.
We place young people there because we want to tick the box that they are young people there.
Indeed.
But we overlook what we call substantive representation. Are these young people capable?
I like that word. I need to underline it.
Substantive representation. Okay. Are these young people able to execute their duties as they have been mandated by their electorates?
Mm.
Of course, we have seen that a lot of young people have been lacking within these councils.
Mm.
The youth voice has also been lagging. Of course, some local authorities, they tried to really empower young people by providing land, by really coming up with programs that empowers young people. But it was not done at a very brighter or broader scale.
Yeah.
It was done really at the very, very little scale. And perhaps that has to do with the type of political landscape that we are operating in, that young people are really not given that opportunity to express themselves. And also because of the ministerial power that has been given by the minister in the Local Authority Act 23 of 1992, where everything is subject to ministerial approval. Of course, I think it's perhaps that there's no synergy between these young people and what their political parties want them to do. How often do these political parties really hold their young people that are represented in councils accountable?
Mm-hmm.
Do they perhaps have a quarterly forum where these young people are expected to present what they've been doing in councils?
Yeah.
And how do these political parties also give the necessary support to these young leaders? So those are some of the factors that we need to look at.
Yes. Yeah, before we come to today and what do we expect also in the next 5 years, because somebody must be elected, somebody must lead, and the future must be defined by those who are in charge. Tade France, are you there?
Yes.
I want you to look at, because I want to give you the elders, and I want to give you the what, especially when you look at regional councillors and also local authority councillors, what do you think are some of the things that let's look at the past 5 years. What did they miss, particularly when it comes to what was supposed to be done? Because we have an issue of housing that was at the center of that. We have issue of employment. And what do you think need to be done better moving forward, particularly after today?
Yeah, I think the problem is that some councillors are still living in the 1990s.
Okay, okay.
In their mentality of understanding what their responsibility and role in that position in which they are elected is, as far as that is concerned. They don't understand their role at hand. You know, they are still living in party power, political party power privilege.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of, eroded mentality. It's an eroded mentality.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, and that's why you saw the absolute, firing of the Katima Town, Katima Town Council.
Mm-hmm.
And apart from that, there's still chaos because one of their bishops is still part of the regional council.
Mm-hmm.
And then you are seeing there's a fight between the minister and the chairperson of the regional council in the region.
Mm-hmm.
That has now made Zambezi to be the most corrupt region in the country so far.
Yeah.
Because of what has been going on there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you put that, it's really a major setback.
Mm.
And in fact, a slap in the face. A slap on the face as far as the 8th administration and what they want to achieve is concerned. And that's why you see the minister trying to work very hard, to curtail that. But it is something that has been cemented by other ministers that have come before him. He really need to get a grinder to remove that, whatever it is. Because it is something that has roots and those roots have gone deeper.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one problem where officials are more powerful than their responsibility and what is expected of them. And that's a mentality that if the new administration as far as the regional and the local authority are concerned, if that we have, then it's a sad situation that we are going to find ourselves.
Yes, we are coming back to you, Tade France. I want to look at my colleagues in Windhoek and also in Rundu, and we'll connect with you soon. Just stay online. Yeah, we are going to a very short commercial break. Then we are going to communicate with Dwight Links. Then from there, Anakreta Haikera from Rundu, just to tell us what is really happening that side, how is the voters turnout, and also what are some of the challenges, particularly today, regional and local authority elections. And as I indicated, today in the studio, we are with Dominga Dal, the youth leader, and he's also here to unpack the aspect of election analysis and also to look at the perspective of young people, especially today when Namibians are voting their regional and local authority councillors. So stay tuned. We are here until the hour of 1600 hours.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its
Eagle staff. FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM,
The Ipurane ngelo wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukulile Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano hile koshiwana Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa Nune udo otukwetira o special Getashia kengeshe faa omarudi dayo loka Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa Ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali Ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafilane Eagle FM VI
Yeah, we are continuing with a special program on election analysis, and we are speaking about today regional and local authority elections. And I'm joined by my colleague Dwight Links, especially when you look at the aspect of you know what was happening, particularly today in Windhoek, and also to give us what are some of the challenges that he has found on the way, and what are some of the observation. Dwight Link, good afternoon, and thank you for joining us at this special program on election analysis. How are you doing, Chief?
I'm all right, and you, David? How are you doing?
No, I'm well, I'm well. Where did you start today, and what is your observation?
Well, David, we started this, or on my side, I started this morning at the Windhoek Central Hospital, primarily from there, which is in the Windhoek West constituency.
Yeah.
Just to primarily see what the response would be, the turnout would be specifically, and how things went.
Mm.
The quick talk there with the presiding officer there was that there were voters that showed up early to cast their votes. Obviously, if we remember back to what happened last year, people also showed up early. And then there was just pandemonium, or technically a little bit of chaos from there because we waited so long.
Okay.
However, the picture was completely different for the day. So if you're going to ask the one part of your question, which is about challenges, technically speaking, things are smooth sailing. I don't know if the voters know that they've got a vote for the day. But primarily, things are smooth sailing. Even at the polling station I am now currently at here in Sederhof, which is in Windhoek East, where it's I won't say it's moving smoothly because there is no queue.
Yeah.
Primarily, if you do find a queue, it's probably maximum two to five people that'll be waiting. And it had been, and it's been a similar scenario since what I saw this morning at the Windhoek Central hospital scenario in terms of just the turnout. Mm-hmm. So the particular question would be one based upon, is there an adequately enough amount of voters that were registered?
Yeah.
And is that adequate? Is that same particular registration number actually correlating to the amount of people that potentially live in a specific constituency?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason... So sorry, David. Yeah, first ask your question before I continue.
No, in terms of demographic, I want to understand, through your observation, what age rate, or in terms of demographic, how did people show up? Do we have young people? Do we have adults? Do we have pensioners? How does the picture look from the first polling station and also to where you are now?
Well, from the first one to where I am currently now, there's predominantly more senior people, so people above 30. Even though in the morning when I showed up there at Windhoek Central Hospital, it was predominantly people slightly older, either my age range slightly younger than me, but they're still above 30 and the likes. Even with one nurse querying whether or not she will still be able to vote if she ends her shift, which would be after 5. And it was asked, you know, where do you actually stay? Because it's based upon where you live, not where you work. And it sometimes seems that people also have those confusing scenarios, you know, that where they work and where they stay seems to sort of like overlap in the understanding of what this specific elections is about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any other additional, you know, observation that you have seen? Because looking at where I was at Katutura Police Station, and by 11:30 there, it's only 21 people who have voted, and I'm also asking myself, where are the young people? But when I came to the studio, I went via Singa Kota Kapana, and I see the whole Kwaitos and superstars are there, and they don't even know. I don't even, are they going to vote now, or they want the last minute things? What do you think is the cause of that?
Well, here's the thing, David, which literally correlates with what the nurse official, the nursing official at Central Hospital asked just this morning was, do people know specifically that they have to only vote where they live?
Yeah.
That's where they should have registered.
Mm.
And if it is the same vote, what was that thing that the SADC commission, that word that they used last year, polling station shopping. When you bounce from polling station to polling station, looking for a scenario that looks a little bit quicker, looks more convenient, and, you know, you don't wait as long. For Namibians, you could probably still see that they still probably have a little bit of trauma of last year's experience of the lines that we all had, and specifically the polling station shopping that took place. Because people drove from, what was this, Ochihase, the mine?
Yeah.
And from Finkenstein to Windhoek.
Yeah.
And specifically with myself last year, where I voted, and where I only voted at close to midnight last year, because so many people were joining the queue and the queue wasn't moving fast enough, only for us to hear that it was actually the equipment that was heating up too quickly because it was so warm or so hot last year.
Yeah.
Today, specifically, is the complete opposite, David. I came now to cast my vote here at Seydorf, and as I'm standing on the queue specifically to be now checked, verified my car, the power for the tablet they used was too low, and then it obviously the application tells the ECN official that the tablet will not function any further because the power is too low, so it needs to be charged. And then the presiding officer had to inform the police officer there to say, listen, we need the other tablet because this tablet needs to be charged, reset, not reset, but switched on, switched off, and then switched back on for it to refresh, as we all know how technology works, in order for them to start using the other tablet to continue with processing. So primarily, David, things are pretty smoothly in terms of observation. And just as a fun fact, just to add in this for you, David, just for you and the studio guests, think about. So for the local authorities, we have an eligibility of 752,000 voters that can vote local authorities.
Say that again for the listeners.
752,000 voters.
That is total local authority in Namibia.
Yeah. No, that can vote for local authorities.
Yeah.
And the amount of voters that can vote for regional authority is 1.5 million. So there's half of that 1.5 million that can't vote for local authorities, and only 752,000 that can vote for local authority representation. Yeah. And then just to round it off, David, specifically, like, the amount of candidates that, because I live in Windhoek East, that are available in terms of, if you now ask the question of plurality, like what we media guys are trained on, you know, you must have multiple voices speaking on multiple subjects. Here, in terms of the vote casting, there were only three candidates I could choose from, and none of the three were any of the candidates that I actually expected from the particular party I want, that I technically support for. So I was like, what is this?
What are you saying? Okay. So
there are scenarios like this.
Yeah,
so David, on my side, specifically, these were the observations that I saw. Everything is plain sailing.
Yeah.
And it's mostly people above 30, married people, older generations, showing up specifically to come and vote. And even as another very interesting fun fact, there's a guy training his daughter here in the car park how to drive instead of how to vote.
Yeah. No, but I think, maybe they are still coming. Maybe they are still coming. They say it's too early to judge. Maybe we like last minute things. But in terms of the numbers and statistics that you gave us, we were supposed to be already half of, you know, what, we are. Especially when it comes to eligibility of voting. So we are going to speak to Anakreta to see what is happening that side of Rundu, and also what is happening. But Dwight, thank you very much for updating us, and we'll be back to you, and also to give us another update. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Not a problem.
Right. Yeah, we'll speak to Ana Creta, Aikera, in a very short period of time, unless, Dominga, you have a comment while we are there, especially from what Dwight have said.
Yes, I think he's very right to say that some of the candidates that one was expecting from their from various political parties are not appearing. Yeah. So it really becomes very difficult
for you to choose
which political party you'll be voting for.
Mm.
But I think generally the reason why we are experiencing a lower voter turnout, it's perhaps because of the lack of civic education.
Mm-hmm.
You would see that a lot of people really do not understand the importance of this election. But I always say that these elections are actually more important because it speaks to the grassroots level needs of our community members. And not only that, it creates that synergy between local and the central government. But because there is no enough awareness, both from political parties and as well as from the ECNS and institution, it really becomes a problem for people to really come out in their numbers and vote. But I think, looking at it maybe from a different perspective, there's a disconnect between young people in political leadership.
Okay, we are not at the same frequency.
We're not at the same frequency.
Yeah.
And that stems from the fact that the political leadership continued to promise the young people about tangible or real development that should come in their communities.
Yeah.
But year in and out, that does not happen. Perhaps as a country, we are experiencing what we call transition fatigue, where the promises of our liberation struggles has not yet turned into economic liberation.
Mm-hmm.
35 years after independence, we are still speaking about land delivery. It should not be the case. 35 years after independence, we are still speaking about unemployment rate in the country.
Yeah.
I mean, given the resources that we own as a country and given the very young population that we have, we should at least be facing some direction somewhat. But we're still speaking about the struggles of the liberation struggle. So I think as a country, we are experiencing transition fatigue. Perhaps we have even lost touch with our constituency.
Yeah.
And this is why there's a huge disconnect. And this is why particularly young people don't really see the need of going out in their numbers and casting their votes.
Yeah. And maybe while we are there, how do you, because maybe the very important point that you mentioned is civic education. Because through civic education is where you be able to understand that I'm the one who is giving this person power.
Yes.
I can remove him and I can also hold him accountable because you are sitting there because of me. Maybe what do we need to do from ECN to political parties to not only come as a researcher, what are the innovative way of making sure that young people are coming back, young people are part of the democratic process, not only electing, but also understanding. What do you think needs to be done?
I think from the ECN as an institution is after, I know we have two election cycle year.
Yeah.
We have two election cycle year. The ECN should not go and relax. They should always have civic education throughout the 5 years. I know it's a very expensive exercise.
Yeah.
I mean, generally, democracy is a very expensive exercise. There's nowhere where you are going to conduct elections and it doesn't become costly. Political parties also need to raise awareness about the importance of these elections, particularly.
Yeah. Yeah.
They need to come up with forums where they really initiate engagement between young people and the local authority councillors so that they are on par with what the local authority councillors are doing. And then also, they sort of exchange ideas as to what young people really want. Because sometimes we sit in these offices and we make policies that does not even speak to the lived realities of young people.
Yeah.
We make promises that does not even speak to the material conditions of young people. So this is where the disconnect really comes from. And I think from young people also, it's high time that we become responsible adults. Mm. We can't also just continue complaining, but we also do not play our part.
Yeah.
Like what you're saying, I think election day in Namibia has been reduced to Brying Day.
Yeah, people are
it's basically Brying Day. My friends are like, what are you doing today? I'm like, we first need to cast our votes, then only we can bribe.
Yeah.
So I think the responsibility should come from all stakeholders, whether it's the electorates themselves, whether it's political parties, and the ECN as an institution. But I think the most important issue that we are noticing is perhaps people are still much, perhaps people do not want to go through the same experience that they've gone through last year during the ECN, where there were long queues, where the tablets were freezing.
Yeah.
So ECN was not really clear on that front, and perhaps people are still stuck in last year's mess.
Yeah.
So this is why it's important that institutions that are mandated to conduct elections, they should do that in a timely manner. They should do that in a transparent manner. They should do it in a very efficient and effective manner, so that citizens do not lose hope, citizens do not lose trust in such institutions.
Yeah. Before we talk to Anacreta, here we call her Mayor of Rundu. Before we talk to Anacreta, I want you to, when we come back, I want us to speak about what are challenges that, councillors are also facing, either it's regional and local authority councillors, because I have seen and I observed, I talked to some people who, when they get to power, they really want to do something. But when you get to a regional council's office, you realize that you don't have a budget. You need to go to the region and beg. You need to make sure that, your points are well heard, and you need those support and all those things. Maybe we'll also touch that after we speak to Anacreta. But for now, dear listeners, you can also engage us in the studio at 083-288-401-083-288-401. Today we are analyzing regional and local authority elections in Namibia.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any other staff.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my catatura. Menace,
right?
Because I grew up in Catatura, and I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipurane ngelo wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwepo tete okoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Kono ngeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi tayo loka. Okone ushe ndife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge fata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko berewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
We are continuing with a special program on election analysis, particularly in regional and local authority elections. And we are looking at Kavango regions. And that side, we have our colleague, Anacreta Haikela, who is online with us. And just to indicate to us what is really happening, and also what were some of her observations, particularly when she started being in the field, today. From the morning hours. Anacreta, good afternoon, and welcome to the special program of election analysis. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, David. I'm doing quite
well. Yes. Maybe you can give us an observation, particularly what happened since morning. Where did you start? What are some of the improvement, and what are some of the challenges which have happened in that area where you have visited, particularly in terms of elections?
So I'm just going to give an update of Kavango East and also Kavango West at the same time.
Yeah.
And here are some of the updates have for you.
Yeah.
So in the Kavango East voters turn up in Rundu, started specifically this morning at around 7 o'clock. Some were also observed around 6:30, just going to the nearby polls. With residents arriving in a manageable number to cast their ballots at the Rundu government hall. And polling officials say the process has been smooth with no major delay or disruption reported. So when I was in Tumweneni, the informal settlement this morning, it was slow as many residents were still preparing to head to the polls. Meanwhile, at the Dama Combined School polling station, I also noticed there was a 94-year-old pensioner by the name Ruth Nangura
94.
Who arrived early, 94.
Okay.
Yeah, 94, who arrived early to vote. And she told Eagle FM that she wants change and hope the new councillors will bring development to the people. And we went as far as to Sawyema, Elson Team 1 in Rundu itself, where the presiding officer said they were ready from 4 o'clock in the morning, and voters started coming as early as 6 o'clock. And by the time they already opened, they had a lot of people that came. Now, moving to Kavango West, a large number of voters turn up, especially at Mupini Combined School in the Kapo constituency. And Regina Muyeye, who is the presiding officer, they said everything has been running smoothly since morning time, with elderly people receiving proper guidance on how to vote. And still in the Kapo area, residents of Matende said they came out in number to vote because they are desperate for change. They raise serious concern also about water access, sanitation, and poor service delivery. You wanted to say something?
Yeah, I wanted to. No, you may finish, and after that, you can also look at the demographic to say who turn up in terms of we want to see the young people showing up, because we are 70% of the Namibian population, and also in terms of the numbers of statistics of those who are voting, and what is the demographic in terms of those who show up?
Like I said when I started talking, that most of the people that turn out this morning are elderly people. If I'm saying a 94-year-old turn up polling station, you must already have a picture of it's elderly people that are mostly turning up at most polling stations right here in the Kavango West and also in the Kavango East region.
So what are the young people saying?
Most of them are saying what is the need for voting when they know things never change for the past 35 years. And some of them were like, it's better to just go to your field and perhaps be busy in your field while going to vote for someone that is only going to attend to their family. And when projects come, the youth are forgotten, and the projects just go to those ones who are already having something, and the vulnerable ones are disadvantaged.
Yes, we must continue with the update.
All right.
Yeah. Yes, Anakreta, maybe you may also touch on apart from now those who showed up, maybe you can also touch on some of the challenges, either from the election officials, either from the voters. What are some of the key challenges that have been faced?
So far, we didn't see any of the polling station that has challenged. The only challenge that was there is one of the.
Come again? Hello? Anakreta? Yeah, we lost her, but she will soon join us to give us updates on what is, happening that side of Rundu. But for looking at that input, it's all over to say the young people are showing. The young people are showing, some of, challenges that they think are not yet addressed, particularly looking at the aspect of, is housing, is youth unemployment, and also many other challenges. Because I have seen, when you look online, you've seen residents are saying, no, I'm not going to vote to look at this sewage and all these things. Maybe it's also the time that we need to look at what is hindering the, councillors to deliver. Is it the policy? Is it the political sabotage, as some present, or there are some real, things that need to be done to empower them to make sure that when it comes to development, things are not only adding when we speak, but things are, advanced. Dominga, I want you to look at challenges that councillors are facing, either at the local authority level, at the regional council level, and what need to be done. Because I've seen one councillor, and he's very good with mobilizing people, and he has been winning elections.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a time I sat with him and said, Chief, now I want you to give me records, what things we have achieved. Mm-hmm. Then he speak about the budget and all these things, and what can we also do to make sure that councillors, they don't only speak when they are delivering food relief programs or some opportunities are coming, but they run real development. What are some of the key challenges as a researcher? What are some of the key challenges that councillors are facing in order for which prevent them to deliver on developmental issues?
Okay. Of course, one of the prevailing issue has to do with limited financial resources. You have seen that over the years there have been a budget cut when it comes to local authority councils and as well as regional councils or local authority councils rather. Let's give an example of Gibeon and Swakopmund. I think last year they were only given $3,000 towards their developmental project.
What?
$3,000 only. And it was debated in parliament.
Yeah.
It was actually a sad state of reality because members of parliament were questioning that. I mean, you don't even use $3,000 to buy monthly groceries in your house. Then you give this to a local authority towards developmental projects. What are they supposed to be doing with such money?
Yeah.
And part of that comes from the, what we call political sabotage. Because if you have to look at the council that is not mainly run by the incumbent government, but it's actually opposition-led, that particular minister, because everything within the local and regional council is subject to ministerial approval, would, of course, not increase the budget because that will become political suicide. So that is one. Two, I think the challenges has to do with the powers that have been bestowed upon the minister. If a local authority councillor wants to embark on any project, whether it's construction of malls, constructions of houses, investors coming in to invest or set up anything within your locality, it's subject to ministerial approval. So now imagine the minister sits with all 57 councils request, all 121 regional council request on his table. So how do you then expect that minister to execute his job properly with all that is given to him? That is one. I think secondly also has to do with the fact that a lot of our regional councillors or local authority councillors, they do not understand their powers. And you would see that during our engagement, this local authority councillor does not even know what he or she should do. And that stems from the fact that how we elect these people becomes a problem, because most of these people are elected through what we call the political pot. And at the political pot has nothing to do with competence. It's all about numbers.
It's how they cook you.
Yeah. So if you have the numbers, then definitely you'll appear number one.
Yeah.
If you don't have the numbers, unfortunately, you are not going to make it. And I also think one of the challenges has to do with political interference. Some of these councillors do not even think on their own. They need to get instructions from their party leaders. And sometimes their party leaders do not even understand the challenges that these councillors are faced with within their localities.
So, you are saying when you are elected within the council, mm-hmm. you must be independent and work within that institution?
Not necessarily independent. Yeah. Of course, you are there to represent your party and you are there to implement your party's manifesto.
Yeah.
But your party's manifestos and policies should be made tailor-made to the social and economic factors of that locality. Of course, if you go to a place like Otsandi, you would notice that the most important thing that those community members in Otsandi would need is water, right? As opposed of you implementing wanting to implement free internet. So of course, your party says within this year you need to implement free internet. But looking at your socioeconomic factors, you as a councillor would know that no, of course, internet is very important, but the number one priority what my community members want is what? Is access to free quality water. Yeah. So this is what I mean in that regard.
Yeah. And, maybe the other aspect I want to touch on is governance and also, cooperation with, other, you know, party members, because you find it's a 50-50 or democracy is a process. Sometimes you are not a stronghold, but what you need to do is to make sure that you represent those who, you know, elected you. What do you think need to be done to make sure that in terms of governance and in terms of cooperation with others? Because when you look at other countries, and a lot of people are impressed, for example, by what happened with G20. People don't even forget that there's a bit of coalition government in South Africa. But how can us Namibians and also those councillors realize that those who elected them are more than parties to make sure that they work together to develop their constituency? What needs to be done to foster that, especially when you find yourself in a situation of not having numbers?
Of course, like I always say that, and Andrew Haywood has explained very well, that politics is the act of compromise and consensus.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you find yourself in a situation where you do not have the numbers, then of course you need to compromise somewhere, somehow. And of course you need to reach consensus as to say, which is that you think is the number one priorities for our community members and our electorate, despite what your political manifesto prescribe.
Yeah.
If it's water, and then of course those are the basic needs, then each and every member in the council, they need to come and agree and say for the next 6 months, we are going to ensure that we are going to give access of water to our community members, right?
Yeah.
And then you move on to the next. And of course, and this is why as councils, you signed what you call memorandum of understanding, because you would of course want to exchange notes. You would of course want to share lessons as to what that council has been doing correctly and how you are able to take that and to transform, your council, respectively. So this is why it's important that once you get into those positions, you just do not go there to fight each other, but sometimes you need to set aside your political egos really and try to work together for the common good of your community. I think one of the challenges that I just remembered and I forgot to mention earlier was the bureaucratic bottlenecks of our administrators.
Yeah, okay.
If you speak to any councillor right now, they will tell you that the administrators are actually the devil in our councils. I don't want to say it like this on air, but it is the fact.
Okay.
They are not really responsive to the dynamics of politics within our local authority councillors.
Yeah.
They are not responsive to
just while you are there, I also want to add on that, because there was one control administrator who told the councillor that I'm here to stay and you are only here for 5 years.
Yes.
but I think it's also something that really need to be discussed, to say how do we deal with that relationship between the technocrats or administrators and also those who have political powers.
And also apart from that, we have also seen that there's a shortage of skilled staff at local authority councils. Some village councils, they do not even have HR manager. That is how they are lacking. They always have to get secondments from other local authority councillors or even engineers to sort of deal with partial planning of the village council. We don't have that. So that really becomes a challenge for village councillors or local authority councillors to really move from being a village council to a town council to a city and so forth. Mm. So those are some of the challenges, that our local authorities are faced with. And this is what the minister needs to address instead of going on a witch hunt and, launching political fights against these councillors. We need to address the bottleneck within our local authority councillors because this is the number one entry level of service delivery. And if we do not address those challenges, we will never be able to deliver the services that we need to our electorates.
Yeah. Now, there's also it's so good that you have mentioned that the relationship between politicians and also those administrators. Now, maybe. Before we go to a short commercial break, then we can also communicate with Franz also to give his input. I want you to look at what needs to be done because, you know, as you said, most of the people go there through what they call political pot.
Mm-hmm.
And let me say, I want Susanna to represent me. But through that process, David, who only have a grade 7, who is only a grade 7 graduate, and Susanna with an MBA, will not be going to that. But now, in a situation that you receive somebody who does not really have capacity, you spoke about subsistence representation. Now, if you are at that aspect, how do we capacitate and advise to make sure that we don't just leave you there for 5 years, then we can try to bring another one? How do we continue capacitate and also make sure that we have right people who represent at this local authority level, even in the situation that you find somebody who cannot even read the police?
Mm.
Because I was looking at, there's a report, a study that done in KZN.
Mm-hmm.
It's found that around 300 councillors, they are illiterate.
Yeah.
How do we expect that to, what do we need to do to make sure that at least we capacitate them and we also make sure that we deliver on the current needs?
Yes. Yeah. I think you are reminding me of what I read 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Of course, the ANC of South Africa is preparing to have their local and regional elections next year.
Yeah.
And part of the requirement that the ANC have come up with is at least you need to have a grade 12 certificate. Of course, one may say that it's very discriminatory to say that leadership is not about education.
Yeah.
But we live in a very modern and digital era where reading happens to be one of the key competency for you to occupy a strategic position.
Yeah.
But I think what should be done is I'm well aware of, as councils assume their duties, they have what they call induction. Mm. And this induction is given by, of course, MURT. But we do not know to what extent or how intense this induction is.
Yeah.
But of course, it's just a 1 week induction where people are just orientated with what they should be doing, but it's not enough. But I think the core issue should be from political parties. Mm. They need to be intentional with capacitating and training their representative because these people are the ones to deliver services and these people ultimately are the ones to really represent their parties in their totality. Mm. I know there are a few political parties in Namibia where they have what they call the councillors forum, where they train their councillors, and these councillors are expected to present what they've been doing for the past 6 months or so. Yeah. And then, of course, they invite experts from South Africa or from any other field to really train these councillors in the various field. One of the parties or two of the parties that I know that have been doing that for the past 5 years was the IPC, the LPM, I think, as the PDM. But I think it should be mandatory for all political parties to really be intentional with training and capacitating their councillors. One, two, we need to put it also, we should also make it mandatory that all councillors should at least possess or have an understanding of local and regional government. At least a certificate. There's a certificate at NAMCOL where you can enroll. It's just 2 years. I think this will sort of open up your mental faculty so that you understand, because local and regional council levels. It's really complex. It's very dynamic.
Yeah.
And one really needs to understand. It's just not about mobilizing and winning that seat, but it's really being a servanthood leadership. It's really serving your community in its totality. So I think those are some of the things that we need to do. Even government, I think Moore should also do enough by really training their people, because you can still engage some, a counselor that has been in council for the past 5 years. They still do not understand how to write a motion. They don't know how to write a motion.
Yeah.
They do not know how a budget should look like. What is an adequate budget? So those are some of the things that we really need to look at, that we do have governance challenges in our country.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that, and you put it, at the right way to say, at least a council business is not it's not an easy business. You need to have capacity. Now let us look at the relationship between the governor and the governed. I mean the councillors and also the people under their leadership. How often do the people under the leadership of those councillors engage them? Especially you have a state of constituency address and you only see elders. You have this meeting, you only see elders. You have CDC, few people show up. How do we motivate people? Because now, a young person, I've seen some guys, I told them, let's go and vote. Some guys, they are telling me to say, no, we are not going to vote because nothing really happened. But do you really understand each other? Do you have that relationship, or we only meet during campaign? Do you have that relationship of saying, we have a community meeting, this is what is happening, this is what needs to be done, these are my roles, this is what you can bring in. How do you build that?
Like I said, I think it's high time that our representative comes up with innovative ways, especially in order to lure young people to attend those meetings. You have seen that currently, and I speak across all political parties, we have a very weak youth-targeted mobilization program. They, of course, rely on outdated campaigns. They want young people to attend rallies. Young people are not going to attend rallies. They are online.
Yeah.
Young people will only attend rallies if there is free alcohol, unfortunately, said state, or if there is a popular artist.
Yeah.
But of course, you are not going to have so much financial resources to be doing that now and then.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they need to find innovative ways in order to...
And they are there for an artist. Not really to say they have a conviction to say what...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And I think somewhere in the newspaper, young people in the northern Namibia said that they only attend rallies for food and t-shirts.
Yeah.
So it means council or councillors or our local representatives, they need to come up with innovative ideas on how to engage young people. And one of the fastest way to engage young people is through the internet. Digital communication.
Yeah.
That is one of the ways to really engage young people. So perhaps they need to come up with intensive online campaigns on how to engage young people. Two, try to ensure that in those CDCs, there are young people represented. Mostly it's just elderly people.
Yeah.
And of course, elderly people might not necessarily resonate with the aspirations of young people, or they might not understand what young people really need. But if we have capable young people in those positions, they will, they are able to push, the youth agenda.
Yeah.
And I think, councillors, all in all, should have an open door policies.
Yeah.
There are some councillors that have been elected since 2020 and they've never even conducted one community meeting. They have never visited their constituencies.
Yeah.
People don't even know them. They are only known by mouth that this is Councillor David, but people have not really engaged with them meaningfully. So I think councillors, their work is community-based, it's grassroots level. They need to go out, engage young people meaningfully, engage all community members meaningfully, and they should just not reduce their job to distributing food parcels or drought relief food, but they should really come up with innovative ways on how they can really empower and transform their communities.
Yeah, indeed. Now, we are going to a short commercial break, then we can speak to France. Then we're also going to speak about what is our expectation after these elections, particularly in terms of those who are going to be elected, those who are going to be given power. what we expect, what do we expect in you, what need to be done to make sure that come after 5 years, mm-hmm. because we see young people are showing up. You will find a situation where they are not even willing to listen to you anymore. And when you have angry young people, we have seen situations which have happened, and security and those who did conflict and resolution studies at the highest level, they can tell you to say a frustrated person does not have any option and can be manipulated by anybody. We have seen, I even wanted to speak about, but maybe we can speak about it the other day about the chairperson of SADC. Mm. We don't have a political head now because he left the country due to what have happened due to that Generation Z. But that is a discussion of another day. But our next conversation is what we expect, what can be done new to make sure that at least we have development, practical development, and those needs of young and adults are addressed. So it's 25 minutes past the hour of 3. We are here until the hour of 4. And we'll be in conversation with Francis Nengera, and we'll be joined by Prof. Kutsie. It's only that now he's a bit caught up, but the conversation should continue.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its
Eagle staff. FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my cattle. Menace,
right?
Because I grew up in Katatura,
uh-huh.
and I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past,
mm.
and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete okoye ekukurile oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala kono ngeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu honda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka okone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge kwata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kongerewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Yeah, we are continuing with election analysis, particularly when today Namibians are going to the polls, or they are already at the polls, electing regional and local authority councillors. And I'm joined by Francis Nengera and to analyze that. But Francis Nengera, the main question on the table here is the future, to say what do we expect from what do we expect after today's elections, particularly from those who are going to be given power. What do we expect anew, and what lesson have we learned from the past?
Yeah, I don't think in politics there are really lessons that people really adhere to. There are few opportunities where you'll see an opportunity and a political formation saying
yeah.
they have learned a lesson from this and they are now improving.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. If, for example, what happened in 2020 happens now, we have a scenario where nobody takes over, singularly, a city of Windhoek, for example. I don't think there's anything learned from the progressive force.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That might be, implemented differently.
Yeah.
Because within the coalition, and in fact within the so-called coalition itself, there were so much internal implosions that is led by ideological immaturity.
Yeah.
In culminating from individual political formations.
Yeah.
In as much as SWAPO has been hit hard in the point that they lost the majority, that they could not singularly you know, hold power. I think whatever happened in the past 5 years, it happened at their strength.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to somehow prove that opposition cannot really take over power. It has really proven that the opposition formation was not ready to take over power,
mm-hmm.
because they failed to come up with a model of power in the city of Windhoek as a united coalition.
Mm-hmm.
So now, having said that, I think what we expect, there's kind of like a wind of change somewhere.
Yeah.
Given the fact that, you know, political formations like, organizations like AR have become a political party that,
yeah,
in fact performed very well. So we might see them also gaining one or two seats here and there.
Yeah.
And, you know, the vibrant spirit that they have as young people might bring a difference on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Also looking at the fact that there's so much fear,
mm-hmm.
on what the minister could do next. As far as the regional council is concerned, when it comes to performance,
yeah,
I think we might see service delivery, you know, improving here and there, because of that fear.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Zambezi has been the most, you know, embarrassingly corrupt region in all this because of what has happened. I think we might see change,
mm-hmm.
here and there,
mm.
because of that fear.
Yeah.
Because other towns and, you know, regions will be afraid of being embarrassed to the lowest as what happened to Zambezi.
Mm, 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 mm.
So those are quite, you know, changes that are playing in, you know, positively in favor with the citizens. For example, the minister talking about the Red Force, you know, backing off.
Mm.
And, yeah, all those things that the minister is doing, they are problematic in terms of administration. They are problematic administratively.
Mm.
But they seem to speak a language that, you know, the masses want to hear. They are seeing that, councils are not untouchable as they portray themselves to have been under other administrations.
Mm, mm, mm.
So this will push, you know, councillors to work extra hard because they know now that the possibility for them to get out is very high.
Mm, mm, mm.
Yeah, I think that in itself plays much in the favor of the electorate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, while we are there, there's something that they've been coming up, especially when it comes to monitoring and evaluation, to say we do a lot of planning, but after 5 years, even you can say a lot of things during a campaign. If you want to be elected as a councillor, then you convince us, then we elect you. But after 5 years, there's not really somebody who can come and say, but David, things that you were telling me then, you don't even achieve 20% of them. How do we develop a monitoring and evaluation tool to make sure that we report back, and also people can come? You can come and explain to say why I did not achieve this is because of this one. This is what we need to do forward, because problems continue to be almost the same like how they have been in 2014 or even worse.
Yeah, no, the problem is, I think we sleepwalk into things.
We had autopilot.
For example, you know, in 2013 or 20, all parties went to Bangalore.
Yeah.
To, you know, to check, to see the EVM manufacturing factory in India.
Yeah.
All political parties went there.
Yeah.
And then they even monitored some elections and how these elections were conducted with EVM.
Yeah.
They came back clapping hands and saying, now SWAPO will be challenged because now we have electronic voting machines and not but and it doesn't it that it, it, it seems that it would be difficult for SWAPO to rig election. Mm. I was following that.
Mm.
And then the you know, political opposition slept, all of them.
Mm.
Until the independent candidate came to wake them up and tell them, hey, these machines don't have paper, the verifiable paper trail.
Yeah.
You know? They don't have verifiable audit paper trail. That's when they all woke up.
Yeah.
So if it wasn't for the independent candidate, if there was no independent candidate, we could have been electing with those machines up to now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the same thing that we, even the electorate, we all sleep. Because number one, we go to rallies and we leave our brain at home. And we don't listen to the promises of the people so as to keep, to hold them accountable,
yeah,
you know, tomorrow. Because whatever they said remains at the rally point. Mm. When we leave the stadium, we leave what the promises there.
Mm.
Because no one to hold you accountable.
Mm.
Because people came to the rally and they left their brains at home.
Mm.
So, but if you go to the rally and you go with your brain, then you are able to write a letter to Parliament.
Yeah.
And say, look, we elected the council.
Yeah.
You can write a letter to the National Council or to the National Assembly and demanding answers that you promised this.
Mm-hmm.
You see, PDM, you promised this. LPM, you said this. IPC, you said this.
Yeah.
So you said this, but none of what you said has come to pass. This is 2027.
Mm.
So what is going on? No one can do that because all of us go to the rally and we leave our brain at home.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we hold them accountable? On what basis? When we have forgotten what they've said. So no one can hold you accountable if they don't know what you have said.
If they have a short memory.
So it's not just memory. In fact, leaving the brain at home.
Mm-hmm.
So in that point,
yeah,
no one is accountable to anyone because, first of all, the councillors know that, you know, whatever they said, they left it at that tree,
mm-hmm,
of gathering. No one is now able to remember what they said.
Yes. Okay.
And the problem with the masses is that they are not aware,
mm-hmm,
that they can hold the people that they elected into office accountable.
Mm.
They don't even know that they can write letters to Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know that they can write letters to the National Council or to any line ministry,
mm-hmm,
demanding,
mm-hmm,
answers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So they don't know all that.
Yeah, there's a question which I've asked to Minga, especially in terms of, you know, how do you assist that of who does not have substance, because sometimes a person is elected through a political process, but not only the qualification that he or she does not have, but is not able. But how do we assist councillors? Because some of them, they need assistance. They don't want to show that the councillor can also be lacking in terms of some issues. But how do they get assistance? Because France, you can be an engineer in a community and you understand the councillor has a plan, but you know, he's clueless about, you know, engineering stuff, or you are a policy analyst to say, how do we assist those who are product of, political process and they end up holding power instead of us waiting for 5 years again so that we can see what we can do? If you get my question correctly. Yeah.
If you put somebody in power.
Yeah.
And that person does not understand what he's supposed to do, that's not my problem. The person that is on the ground who is waiting for deliverance, for service deliverance.
Mm.
That's not my problem.
Mm.
That's a problem of the political formation that elected you to stand in there. So they are the ones that should make sure that the people they put up front are people with substance.
Yeah.
Not just people because they want to fill up the booths of election.
Mm, mm, mm.
So my problem is to wait for what you promised me.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you understand what you are talking about or not, that's not my problem.
So you are looking for what is yours?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Your understanding has nothing to do with my expectation.
Mm-hmm.
That's the responsibility of the political formation that put you in power.
Yeah, do we want to say something?
For me as a citizen, I don't care about the level of education. I care about the capacity of your capacity to deliver what you promised me.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see, you promised me, I woke up, I spent my time to be on the queue, and they elected you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's time for payback.
Okay. Okay. Now, while we are there, maybe, there is, something that you want to add, especially when, it comes to, those who still at home, those who are eligible voters with voters' cards, but, somebody is stalled, or somebody is, his viewpoint is weakened by somebody who is saying, no, I'm not going to vote because of A, B, C, and D. But what is your message, especially to those who are not yet at the polls?
Look, voting is not one that brings employment.
Yeah.
If you are talking about to say, I'm not going to vote because there's so much unemployment in young people, you don't know what you're talking about. Because voting is not the one that brings, or elections or voting is not the one that brings, you know, employment, but it facilitates. You know, it facilitates the employment, you know, the process of employment creation when you put in to power the right people.
Yeah,
because employment should not be looked at as if it only comes from one source. But it is also part of your participation as a young person. You know, some of you, when people were busy in class, you were busy writing walls and breaking windows.
Yeah.
And when you failed school, now you want to blame it on a government.
Yeah.
So you also need to know your participation in the situation that you are in. And then if you want to come out, if you want somebody to bring you out, you also need to know what your participation will be. Because it takes two to tango. Now, you as a young person, if you don't want to go and vote, you are depriving yourself an opportunity to hold any leader accountable. Because you cannot finish what you did not start. So if you are not voting, you have no right to complain.
Yes.
Because whatever you want to complain against, those who went to vote, they went to vote because that is what they want. So if you wanted change, you could have voted.
Yes.
So in few point, I can say that please go in there and vote, because your vote counts, and you might be the one to bring change.
Yes, Francis Nengera, thank you for joining us. Thank you for your input.
Thank you.
Yeah, Dominga, you've heard, and I asked you a question before. Maybe just comment on that before we go to the question I've asked you, to say what is that we expect. What do you comment from France? What do you take from him?
He said a lot of things.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that he said just that triggered my mind was that they don't care whether you're capacitated or not.
Yeah.
All they want for a councillor is to deliver services.
Yeah.
And I think that is part of the challenges that our councillors are actually facing. We have a very high public expectation. And of course, sometimes they don't give time for these councillors to actually understand, their environment, and also give them time to implement, what they have promised. But I also don't blame the public in itself, because they have all these years, they have been listening to promises, and this promises is not translating to action.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, people are frustrated, by their surrounding. There's a lack of water, electricity, sewage issues. Just now in Okahanja now, I think it was reported, that members of the, is it Faith Fund community? They are on strike, and that they are not going to vote because there's poor sewage, water and electricity. So that is the public expectation. And of course, our erstwhile councillors have not really, fulfilled their promises, and that becomes a challenge for our incumbent councillors, because the public expectation is so high. Those people want you today, as you assume.
There's a call online. Okay. Maybe you can take
No problem.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, good afternoon. Yes, how are you?
Good afternoon and good afternoon to your guest there.
Yes, she can hear you.
Oh.
Yes.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Yes.
Sorry, you haven't finished your point before.
No, it's fine.
Yeah, I think it's very important that we exercise this power, this right, so that at least we are able to say something, or even to demand for accountability like that Francis is saying. So because many a times it's true we do not vote, especially this time. Because there's no long line. You just go there, cast your vote, you go to your work, but it does not end there on the voting box. It ends where others perhaps have started. You can now continue building upon thereof. So, and then now, when you now, you know, it gives you a sense of purpose. So it helps you. But then, like I say, it's not enough. It is also important that we also then start our engagement, I mean our contribution.
Mm-hmm.
Through this to development, social development and things like that.
Yes.
And because people just think that, yes, I'm just going to vote. That's all. But are we not participating in this process of development or even just to build this nation building through, of course, through election? Even if you do not vote now, at least, because you are thinking that, you know, I'm expecting good things from them. What can the people, what can the nation now expect from you as an individual? So we need to engage in the process, in this democratic process. So not only voting, but also to question and add something. What is it that you can add? Somebody in America, apparently, I always hear him, they are quoting him, ask what you, do not ask what the country can do, but ask something like that, what you can do for your country.
Yes.
That statement should motivate us so that we can then engage in the issue of maybe like you're saying, water and all those services. Sometimes it requires volunteerism, you know, skill. How do you say?
Yes, volunteering.
It requires you to avail yourself, to volunteer yourself, and then maybe in the cleaning of the city, for example. Go to municipality and say, yes, this city is too dirty. There are some bushes there. And then you now work. So that David was saying, the minister, I mean the general, the police commander, say no, we also need to be part, and some of our issues must be incorporated in some of those discussions and documents and things like that. So crime is becoming more higher, and the people are saying, yes, it's because of unemployment. Don't justify crime because of that unemployment. It's true, like he said, it might facilitate, it might bring some frustration.
But that is your opinion. You are entitled to your own opinion. But when you look at the various studies, poverty and criminal activities, they are cousins. They work hand in hand. If you go to poor rural, poor townships, that is where criminal activities are happening. All over.
I understand.
Yeah.
But I know there is a linkage there, but the linkage does not mean that you can justify.
No, it's not justifying. It's just to say there is a relationship and it's a fact.
Well, I know there's a relationship.
Yeah.
The relationship is there. It's also there.
Yeah.
Crime is cutting across all area.
Yeah.
But like I'm saying, it's a linkage, but it does not mean that because there are many people who are in poverty. But they don't commit crime.
Okay. No, there we are together. There we are together. Okay.
So, of course, it's painful and things like that.
Yeah.
But how do you then overcome the poverty within your individual life?
Mm.
Is it to, you know, is to do, to initiate something and do something?
Yeah.
There are even those people who have got big families and they are not employed, maybe gainful employed. But of course, they are languishing in poverty. Which is not a good thing, but they don't commit violence, they don't commit gender-based violence, they don't do all these kind of things that you think they are linked to whatever. So, of course, let's initiate some things, organize ourselves, like what people are now doing, and then see how we can maybe get access to funding. If you have a problem there, so you can, people can facilitate those things, and then you can facilitate the access to funding and things like that. So thank you very much for giving me an opportunity.
Thank you for input. What do you say about this? What do you say about the caller?
You said that voting should just not be about service delivery. It should be about your participatory rights.
And
I agree with him. That, of course, one person always said that democracy should just not end at the voting booth.
Yeah, it's part of the process.
Yes, it should go beyond the voting booth. What do you do as a person after voting? What is your contribution towards your country? Because each and every citizen should strive to be an active citizen, and they should be able to contribute meaningfully to the development of the country. And it's correct.
Yeah.
And of course, this is why I say that perhaps the reason why our country is not developing as it should be, it's because we have mainly left development in the hands of political parties. Mm-hmm. And we as citizens have become very nonchalant with our surrounding.
Yeah.
We have become very reluctant with the development of our community.
Yeah.
And we have left everything in the hands of political processes.
Mm-hmm.
Political processes are not the only vehicle, or political parties are not the only vehicle to bring about development in our country.
Mm.
And I'd like to make reference to a very good writer. I forgot his name, but he spoke about the concept of democratic, what's the word? He spoke about the process of democratic representative. And he says, just because we have institutions that are tasked to bring about change does not necessarily mean the democratic centralism. It does not necessarily mean that these institutions will indeed address all our challenges. Just because we have a female president does not mean that all young people are, all females are all of a sudden empowered. No, that does not, it does not speak to that. But there should be an intentional program, a class agenda to seek to how we address issues such as issues of women empowerment, issues of land delivery, issue of unemployment amongst young people. So let us not create this facade that because we are in a democratic dispensation, that we have this democratic institutions, all of a sudden all our challenges will be addressed through these institutions.
Yeah.
I think that will be very oblivious of us. This is why it's important that we as community members, we need to be activists in our own rights. We need to hold our elected representatives as well accountable.
Indeed.
You as community members do have the right to summon those people. Those people should account to what they've been doing within those different localities.
Yeah, no, that is exactly what is needed. And that is so brave to say a community summoning a councillor to say, come and talk to us. But but it's quite a very relevant point, and there's nothing illegal about that. Now, after I communicate with my colleague, Lois Sashimi from Mandango Update Us, and we are going to have 30 minutes, we're almost there. I want us to speak about generational conflict. I don't know how to put it. There's a way that you mentioned earlier, but I think let's call it generational conflict, because you look at leadership, and I also want your perspective as a young person. You guys, you enter into a bigger space. Not a lot of people enter there.
Yes.
How do people, do they look at your intellectual capacity? Do they look at your age? When, you know, sometimes I've seen it a lot. You can see it in any platform. When a young person raises a voice and say, no, when were you born? And all these things. And how do we work together with each other? Especially, yes, the elders have wisdom. but they don't understand how cybercrime is working.
Mm-hmm.
They have wisdom, but they are not fast with technology. But how do we fill that generational conflict, either in terms of at the regional council leadership and also at the national level? Because there is this these challenges which we have, and when you look at when statistics are indicating to say 70% of young people of Africans are under the age of 30 to say, mm-hmm. which means that they will need to be a transition mm-hmm. where young people are taking over various things. But we're going to go there after I communicate with my colleague to say, and also to look at what is really happening in the side of Ndangwa and other, you know, areas.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of
its Eagle staff. FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my cattle. Menace,
right?
Because I grew up in Katatura, and I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye. Dete ofoye ekukulile oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwai konongeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudini dayo loka okone ushendife nawa nukumona oijemo ili nawa ninge kwata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kongerewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Yeah, we are moving forward with the special program on election analysis and also to look at what's happening, particularly various areas in Namibia. We're speaking with Nakrita from Rundu. Now I'm in contact with my colleague from Ndangwa, that is Louis Ashimi, just to give us an update to say what is happening in terms of voters turnout, and also what is her observation since morning. She has been in the field. And the last time I called her, she said she was resting a bit before she got back in the field. Loise, good afternoon, and how are you doing?
Good afternoon, Dixon. How are you?
No, I'm doing very well. Let us hear from Ndangwa. When did you start today, and what happened, and what is your observation there?
Yeah, my first point was at Ndangwa Trade Center.
Yeah.
I think 7:30 actually, not 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah, but speaking to the presiding officer, she says that, like, not people apparently just came through from 4:30 there in the morning. So that's why, like, the time that I came there, people are not really, it wasn't even that picked up that time. But, like, a lot of people came through early morning and then during the day, I mean, as time goes on, then people really just, the number, also. So now then, after that, I went to Wasampa Mall.
Yeah.
But then now, Wasampa Mall, like, when the moment I just approached Wasampa Mall, like, two individuals approached me to say, I would rather to ask me, hi, ma'am, can you just, tell me that, is this the right place or the right police station to vote? Yeah. So then I think one thing, David, that I picked up and that what I have observed, David, is that I think our people don't really have more information or whether they're not really educated about the polling station, about the voting for the processes. Because now then they say that apparently, you know, they were told that they cannot vote here because it is not where they are from. I mean, like, in this person's, seeing that these people's voter status, then indicated that Ndangwa, and meaning that they also registered their voter status in Ndangwa, right? So then now that makes these people vote in the same Ndangwa. So now that's one thing that I think I picked up or observed, or the challenge also, is that a lot of people don't, they are not really sure of where to vote. And not just even that, I got a call, from a student. A student from Ogongo campus. In Ogongo region. And then this person said he cannot vote because his voter's card is written, not eligible to vote. You know what? Because apparently, you know, Ogongo campus, that was just the campus, that was just where he studied, but not where he stays. So now, right now, anymore. So now he cannot vote. He cannot go anywhere to vote because now his voter's card is written, not eligible to vote. So I think that's one thing that maybe the ECN need to maybe just put up some measures that, or to allow people to vote wherever they are, and then maybe themselves, then they can able to then go through or to indicate that this person is from whatever constituency, not really the voters to just quickly stay wherever they are, or to just vote where their constituency is. Because like, because I think the reason why right now the youth are not coming through a lot, it's supposed to be. I think that could be one reason, because if one student is saying that, how many maybe students schooling in the very same campus have the very same situation?
And they are not from there.
And they are not from there, because if you're not from there, of course you cannot go from there.
Indeed.
Right now, probably now, it's really right now, I think they are in holiday. You could be maybe in Windhoek, wherever, then of course you are voting. So I think really that maybe ECN itself, they don't even really to be strict that much. And maybe to put some role or the new rules that you can vote wherever, however, indicate where your constituency is. For you, not just not to lose out on that.
Yeah, I want to look at the demographic in terms of age. By your observation, how is it that side? Do you see young people? Do you see adults? Do you see pensioners? What is your observation there?
Okay. Well, thank you so much for that question, really, David. The younger people, I am not seeing them that much. Actually, I can say they are coming through, and also the just the adult age group, they're also coming through. But then the younger people, like, in the younger people, I mean, like maybe someone that just turned 18, 19, 20, 20 something, they are not through. And it's even the very same concern that was raised by the mayor of Ndangwa. I just got in contact with him. I spoke to the mayor, and then he said, really, it's a concern that our people are not coming through, especially the young ones. They were also supposed to be part of the decision making, but then how are they then going to be part of the decision making if they are not coming through? But then he said that they really need to, he urges them to just to come through and vote. Because that's the biggest number, the biggest group that is in this country, yet they are not also coming through in big numbers to come and vote. So I can say really, if I saw them, maybe it's just 2 or 5, not more than 10 people. Actually, it's the polling station that I've visited so far. I've been around maybe, to say 10 polling stations so far, and really, I am not seeing that younger age that I'm just saying, they're from 18, 19. I am not seeing them.
Because ECN is saying it's too early to judge. Let's hope they will show up, because we have until 2100 hours, and let's hope they will show up. Let's hope they understand, and also let's hope they understand how things are going. And while we are there, before I let you go, what are the people who are in the line are saying? What is the main discussion around voting that you can pick up from people when you are moving around?
Okay, there are no really longer queues here, David. I don't know about in the Commerce region, but there are no longer queues. But of course, the people that I spoke to, but of course, there are maybe 2 or 3 people that are in queues, of course, they are saying that they just need change. And the change that they want is they want at least maybe jobs. Perhaps also the people that they trust they could do the job. Because those are the people that they can choose today, they'll vote today. So at least they are really just anticipating that they will maybe then make change, especially with the job. A lot of people really, they want the job. They want jobs.
Yeah.
So other than that, maybe I can just conclude to say that for the few people, because of course, there are also those that they can really just tell that, okay, I do not want to vote. There are a lot of people saying that they do not want to vote. And you know what they are saying, David, they are saying, we do not want to vote because we do not see the means of voting. We do not know.
It's frustration.
Yeah, even where I am from, right? Early morning by 7:20 something, I had to go out to go to an very first polling station.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, David, where I stay, there are also a lot of people that did not vote until now. And I just immediately when I'm seeing them, and I'm like, are you guys not going to vote? And like, no. Most of them, they just say, they just really just tell me straightforward that, like, we are not going to vote. Why should we vote? So there are really a lot of people that are saying that, and I do not know whether maybe it's not, there were no proper awareness to say maybe the importance of voting, because if someone can tell you straight that they cannot vote, it should be a bigger concern, David.
Yeah, indeed.
Why is this person saying so?
Indeed.
I don't think 100 or 10 people or 20 people that you are asking the very same question, why are you not voting, and they just tell you straight that they are not voting.
Yeah, because somebody saying the numbers can also tell you to say if somebody did not show up, it's also part of a vote, like, you know, when you deny to do something, it's showing you to say something, you need to do something. Yeah. Yes, unless you can add one or two points before we go to Abigail to end one or two things too.
You know, maybe in my conclusion is just maybe to let the public for them to go and vote.
Yeah,
they should just go and vote, really. Don't be part of the people that are saying they are not going to vote. Why would you not want to be to participate then?
Yes, Louisa Shimi, thank you very much for input. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, David.
Yes. Yeah. That was Louisa Shimi from Ondangwa, and also to put the point to say, when somebody is not voting, there's also a thing to say, when somebody deny, you must also learn what are the numbers saying. But Dominga, while we are here, there was a time, man, I attended a certain economic discussion, young people, they show up, then I stood up and asked a question. One thing I've said is that, no, you guys, if the way we show up at Kasi Vibe, and I was very happy, Moss.
Yeah.
That if the way we show up at Kasi Vibe is the way we show up at this event, there's no way Namibia is not going to develop. Then they started laughing. My question now is, why should I even go and ask for money? I should even go and get my saving to make sure that I go to Kasi Vibe where I meet my youth. But just to take 2 minutes, go and vote for somebody who's going to lead me for the next 5 years, I don't do that. Why do you think there is a bit of frustration among young people? What do you think is the main cause of that, apart from now service and other things?
I think apart from the issue of service delivery and promises, one of the prominent issues has to do with the distrust that young people has lost.
Yeah.
Within political parties as a whole,
yeah.
And ECN as an institution.
Okay.
Political parties, of course, young people are not really convinced that development will be brought about through using a political vehicle. Because most of these political parties has not really fulfilled their promises. They have also seen how most of these political parties, they just use young people as mobilizing tools, and after they have gotten their seats, there is no intentional program that to keep these young people and also to incorporate and integrate them within the political structures. That is one. Two, I think for the past years, ECN as an institution has really been failing, especially young people. You have noticed or we have seen the challenges and the experiences that young people has experienced with the ECN in terms of their tablets not working, them not opening their polling stations on time. In some instances, special instances where these individuals have a voter's card, but their voter's number does not appear on the voter's roll. So I think those small administrative errors and glitches sort of over the years have made young people to really lose trust in the ECN. And plus, I think there's a perception amongst young people that whether I vote or not, party A or B will always win. I think that is one thing that we need to dismantle, from the beginning and prior to any election cycle. And I think lastly, like I said, especially with this year's election, there was just a very weak mobilization campaigns targeted towards young people or just people in general. Maybe we are experiencing election fatigue. We don't know. Or perhaps people are just not interested. And this year's results is going to be very sad. And one can already feel it because 2020, it was only 38.5% that casted their votes.
That's the record I wanted.
This year it might be less than that. And then how do we then explain that to the electorates, or how do we then convince ourselves that indeed party A has dominated our political landscape? So it really becomes an issue, and perhaps all stakeholders need to go in the drawing board and really reflect and analyze what should we do in order to ensure that people come out in their numbers and cast their votes.
Yes, after communicating with Abigail, I think we'll give an opportunity so you can we can conclude, because we have around 20 minutes. I'll be in communication with Abigail just to give us an update. And maybe in that conclusion, you must also include, how do we make election fun, attractive, and also what each institution need to be doing. Maybe ECN 3, political party 3, civil society 2. They must also come on board and what they need to do. So we're going to a short commercial break, then we can look at Abigail and move forward.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye. Ipurane ngelo wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete okoye ekukurile oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamwiri nawa ninge fata fanoa na Monica ko Eagle FM onore.
Yeah, we are moving forward with election program, and I'm in communication with my colleague Abigail. Abigail was stationed in Windhoek, and we also need to listen from her to see what is her observation, how is her observation, what happened at each polling station that she visited, and also what are the people saying, because it's also very important to say, don't listen to what people are saying, but you must also understand what they are saying, because even the whispers of somebody who does not like you can also change your life. So Abigail, good afternoon and welcome to the special, you know, election analysis program. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, David. Good afternoon to the listeners. I'm very well. How are you?
I'm doing very well now. Where did you start this morning? And also, what are some of your observations, particularly in terms of voters, in terms of election officials, and also the general public?
Okay. So I was in Katutura East.
Okay.
Because that's where I registered to vote.
Yeah.
So this is where I visited a few polling stations.
Mm-hmm.
And in the morning, I started at Mandume Primary School,
mm-hmm.
where the president for Independent Patriots,
mm-hmm.
IPC, I don't know, I happen to forget the C.
Oh, okay.
What it stands for.
Yeah.
Yes. So this is where he was coming to vote early in the morning. And, you know, we had a conversation before he went to go cast his vote.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the questions that arised was, you know, I don't know if you've been hearing people who have been asking why are the presidential national elections not being combined with the local authority and regional elections. So what he had to say on that particular question was that he doesn't support it because he feels like costs might be high, very high.
Yeah.
And also they would now need to be you know, now amending the constitution and also amending the local, not the local, pardon me, but the Electoral Act.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was just one of the points of the many points that was discussed with him.
Mm.
So in terms of the electoral officers here at Mandume, they are very professional and they are very fast.
Mm.
What I observed with the voters is that the turnout is very low.
Like
the turnout is very low.
Mm.
And I tried to engage with a few voters. You know, they are shy. I don't know. It's like they never get used to us media persons when we try to approach them. But I tried to engage with a few of them, but they were, you know, shy. But one discussion that I happened to have with one of the voters was, do they understand why it's important for them to vote? What they answered me was, yes, you know, I love Africa. So it's our right to make sure that we can vote. And, you know, they encourage those who are at home, who are reluctant and, you know, who are hesitant to come and vote, to come out and vote. I went to another polling station.
Yeah.
Which was at Jan Jonker Afrikaner. There it was totally quiet. It was just the electoral officers and the law enforcement officers that were on the ground. It was really empty. Yes. So now I'm back at Mandume Primary School, where I engaged with the presiding officer because it's empty currently as I'm speaking to you. There's nobody in the queue.
Okay.
But people are coming, you know, in one by one or two by two, they are coming and they are leaving. So I interviewed her how the process has been so far. And she said that, no, the process is slow. And it seems like the process is low due to the fact that there are other polling stations here in Katutura East constituency. So maybe this is where we are observing a low turnout as media persons at different polling stations, because it's not a lot of people who are registered in constituencies to vote. If polling stations are a lot in an area and people have a choice to go where and where, all we will see is a lot turnout whilst people are actually going out to cast their votes.
Have you also experienced people who are confused? They don't know which constituency they are. Where do they register?
No. So far, I haven't experienced anybody who seems to be confused or not know which constituency they are supposed to go vote. It looks like people are aware of their constituencies and where they need to or where they can go and cast their votes. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. While we are there, in terms of demography, what age group are you seeing coming through? Are you seeing, is it the young people? Is it the adults? Is it the pensioners or middle age people? What is your observation in all the polling stations that you went to?
I think at the moment I can clearly state that I'm seeing the middle aged and the young ones compared in the morning hours, in the morning hours, I experienced a high number of pensioners. Mm-hmm. You know, they were really coming out in numbers. Yes. Yeah. So I think also it's, you know, the belief of grown people, pensioners, they prefer to do things early in the day.
Yeah.
Yes, so that they don't, you know, get caught up in not doing other things because now they have to go and cast their votes.
Just to tell you that you know, I also slept in the queue today and then said, no, David, I'm already here.
Yeah, somebody was also telling me that a listener of mine on Sizuma, when I also engaged with him, he was telling me when he went to go vote, he found people who also went there like 4 in the morning, which I feel like it's unnecessary in this type of elections because the good thing about these elections is that they don't get overcrowded compared to the presidential and national assembly elections, you know, where people opt to go to the nearest places and then these nearest places, they end up getting overcrowded. So it's totally different with these elections, really. The good thing about these elections, you can go anytime. Best believe me, you are going to cast your vote in less than maybe 30 minutes if you really delay or less.
Yes. Abigail Nalisa, thank you for joining us. Thank you for your input.
Thanks. Thank you so much, David. Right. And the listeners, if you haven't yet casted your vote, please go out and cast your vote.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Yeah, that was Abigail Nalisa, so one of my colleagues. Now, now we have 8 minutes before we come to the end of our program.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to find a way on how to summarize this because you are rare people to find also. Yeah, because look, today is election day.
Mm-hmm.
We have a national project, Vision 2030 is around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
There is Agenda 2063 ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Dominga, in the next 20 years, we are not going to be defined by our political parties.
Of course.
But what we have done
mm-hmm.
in this period of time. Now, as somebody who... You travel, you see various, you know, different leaders, you see also young people. What are the key best things that Namibia need to look at? Key priorities, because we are everywhere now. Key priorities that Namibia need to look at in terms of democracy, election is part of them,
mm-hmm.
and also in terms of development in general, and also utilization of skills. Maybe start from there, then we can conclude with elections.
Yes, I think one, what we need to do is to have an intentional program from government. We need to have an intentional program from government that aims to upskill young people.
Mm-hmm.
Only then we'll be able to address the class and generational structural struggles mm-hmm. of young people, mm-hmm. whether it's of unemployment, inequality, and poverty. Mm. It's very important. And we have seen time and time and again that government comes up with initiatives or programs to really try to empower young people.
Yeah.
But these programs, they become a White House of government.
Yeah.
It's because there's no clear class agenda or there's no clear mechanisms to ensure that this program indeed serves to empower those intended individuals. That is one. Two, we need to move away from the process of political affiliation, but we need to embrace all young people that are capable so that they are placed in those strategic positions and they are able to contribute to the body of academia in our country or to the development of our country.
Mm.
I think 15, 20 years ago, our current prime minister came up with a phenomena of jobs for comrades, which was one of the most daunting thing that ever was in Namibia.
Yeah.
That if you're not a comrade, even though you are qualified, you would not get a job.
Mm.
I think we need to move away from that because in the process, if we look at it from that process, we are losing out on brain.
Mm.
And we may be wanting those people that are not necessarily comrades or leaders or whatever, but they should occupy those spaces and they should be able to lead the developmental agenda. I mean, Agenda 2063, we might not all be here, but it speaks to about how African countries should intensify training. I mean, trading amongst themselves. It speaks about how African countries should be industrialized. So with that given, I think as a country in the next 5 years, we need to intensify our industrialization process and policies. Vision 20 also speak about how Namibia can become industrialized.
Yeah.
So if we are not intentional and if we do not intensify the fight towards that, then of course we will not be able to attain Vision 2013, we will not be able to attain Agenda 2063.
Yeah. Let's look at generational conflict. We have 5 minutes and I hope we can add 2 more hours, but you have other things to do. Uh-huh. Let's look at generational conflict. How do we fill this gap in politics, in private sector, in public sector, wherever? Because you have intellectual, you have wisdom. They are always fighting to say, you just came yesterday.
Yeah.
And there are always also somebody who say, no, I came yesterday, but there are things that I need to assist you. How do we work together then?
I think we need to find a counterbalance.
Yeah.
Whether it's in politics or any other sphere of society.
Mm.
Yes, it is true, that the elderly generation might be more experienced than us because they have gone through the same stages that we are going through. They do have the necessary wisdom. Yes, but they might not necessarily understand the time and space that we're operating with. Young people are energetic, they are capable, and they are talented. And perhaps what we need to do is to find a synergy on how we can all come together and create that very balance that we want. How do we tap from the elderly generation in terms of their experience and wisdom? And how do we make use of the innovative skills and capability of young people? So we need to strive to create that synergy so that we bring about development in all spheres of our society.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's look at tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
because today is history is going to be made. Either it's lower vote turnout, either it's people who vote and also show new leaders who are going to lead us.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the message that we have to those who are going to be lucky to go through this process and elected, especially looking at really a lot of things that we need, because when you travel, when you read documents, sometimes you want to cry,
mm-hmm.
because things are not what you're supposed to be. But the leaders, they also have a role to play. What is your message that you have to them?
My message to those that will be occupying those leadership position tomorrow is that your allegiance should just not be to your political party, but it should be to the electorates that you are going to serve.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, those are the people that you need to service for the next 5 years.
Mm.
Two, do keep to the promises or the commitment that you have given to your electorates.
Mm-hmm.
You need to understand the position and space that you are occupying. You need to ensure that you serve your community regardless of their political affiliation. I think we have seen, especially in the northern part of the country, where councillors are like, but you're from party A, I'm not going to give you this drought relief because it's from central government. But we need to reject those thoughts in its totality, and in which to ensure that once you are voted, you provide services to each and every Namibian, because it is their right, as per Article 14 of the Constitution, to choose which political party you would like to affiliate yourself with.
Yes. Before we conclude the Isakola,
no problem.
You can take. Good afternoon.
But as you just mentioned it now, I wanted to find out from
we are concluding.
Oh, I know you are concluding, but please let her allow her to come next time.
Yeah, no,
it will help us to find the leadership path to motivate and inspire our young ones there.
Yeah, I'll make sure that I ambush her time also, like we ambush
her time.
Yeah.
I don't know where I've been hearing her voice, but ambush her so that I think lack of leadership on that to lead the youth and motivate them, I think somehow lagging behind.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah, we are 1 minute. Have you heard?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we will come to business and economics.
I'll definitely do that. I think my last thought will be, please, I'm appealing to all young people.
Yeah.
Wherever you find yourself
yeah.
across the corner of this country, please do go out and go cast your vote. We still have more time.
Yeah.
And like the other caller said, if you do not vote, you don't have any right to complain. Mm. So please go and practice your civic right or your democratic right. And please go cast your vote for the best candidate that you feel like speaks to your aspiration and your lived experience.
Yes. Dominga Ndara, thank you for your time. Thank you for joining us. It's an honor to have you. And, go out there and vote. And, bye bye for now.
Thank you.